The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings, who are entirely responsible for its content.
Sorry, guys, you are on your own.
This is the Federal Football Report, a weekly wrap-up of all things burgundy and gold. The Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Here are your hosts, Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings.
Welcome to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, online at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield. So the Redskins lose, but still in a tie for first place.
First place.
As opposed to a two-team tie. It's now a three-team tie with the Eagles, the Giants, and the Redskins, all three at 5-7
after a
19-16 loss to the one game back, Dallas Cowboys at 4-8. Kevin, welcome to the Federal Football Report.
Man, you know, I feel kind of like dirty, man. Last week we were in first place. Now we're in first place, but I'm kind of like whispering.
Well, see, this
right
is what happens with the NFC East. And so you go back to last week, right? Feeling good, beat the Giants, and then just beat the Giants. Like, I mean, look, okay, so the Cowboys win yesterday, but that was an ugly win. I mean, it wasn't like a convincing, like, kind of we, you know, imposed our will win. The win last week against the Giants, I mean, we imposed our will win against the Giants. So you have that kind of win. You feel good about it. The Giants seem to be reeling. You just beat them. Now you're in first place. The Eagles just got blown out. The Cowboys looked ridiculous against the Carolina Panthers. You figure, whoa, wait a minute. There's some good things happening here, right? And the Giants lose to the Jets, so it's all setting up really, really good. But then the Eagles beat the Patriots.
What was that about?
And the Eagles beat the Patriots.
What was that about? But you know what? During the course of a season, there's going to be a game like that. We just say, what's happening? Okay, we just don't have it. Maybe put in the backups. Right? And Tom Brady still almost pulled that one off. But still, that's the company we're in. This is the NFC East, man. The NFC Beast, not NFC Least. Of course, it's a cycle, man. You know, it's this year, everything is aligned. You know, every once in a while in astronomy, sometimes Jupiter, Mars, and Venus all in a straight line. And it pulls everything one way.
Right.
That's what's happening, man. The alignment is just, you know, we got new coaches, we got old coaches, we got new players, we got old players, injured players,
everything's kind of weird.
Everything's just aligning right now, and that's the tragic part of this, if I can use that word, that the team, the Burgundy and Gold, is in a position to take advantage of that alignment, but it just seems like they didn't realize, you know, they had the destiny in their own hands last night.
Right, right. They still do. I mean, so Philadelphia beats the Patriots, and you're like, all right, well, you know, still with the win, solo number one in the East. And then Monday night happens, and it's like all the offense that they had against the Giants seem to just go out the window. You know, and from the first snap, you sit there and you watch, you know, the Cowboys defense blitz the Skins, and I'm just thinking to myself, this has disaster written all over it for Dallas. Because if they pick up the blitz and Kurt just makes a throw, you know, you're looking at a pretty big play. And time after time, there were a few moments early in the game where they did not pick up the blitz. But just time after time as the game went on, they did a pretty good job of picking up the blitz. Kurt didn't make the throw.
Yeah, well, see, it was effective that first time. And you got to give it to the Dallas coaching staff. They took a gamble early and hit Kurt early. And I've noticed, if you hit Tom Brady early, you hit Eli Manning early, and now it's showing if you hit Kirk Cousins early, that takes a half a second off their game because they're looking down at that rush. And that's right. What happened with Kirk last night, I felt, because as a matter of fact, I was talking to George Wallace a little bit earlier, and he was saying that, and we'll get into like the later part of the game of what Deshaun did, but he's saying Deshaun was running free quite a bit, and they weren't giving him the ball. He was getting very frustrated, which led to some stuff later in the game, but let's not get there yet. Right?
Were a couple of times where Pierre Garçon was at least had the defender beat on a couple of blitz pickups, and Kurt overthrew him. And what was interesting, though, is that even despite that kind of a defensive start for the Cowboys, which has been kind of the Cowboys' deal the whole season with Romo out, is the fact that, you know, the defense will play fine, the offense just can't move the ball. So the defense gets those stops. Then right on the first possession where the Redskins are punting, you've got two penalties on the Cowboys on special teams. And then Darren McFadden fumbles the ball on that first possession on second down. And you're like, So, okay, yeah, it got the sack and the quick three and out or whatever, but the Cowboys played sloppily to start the game on offense and on special teams, but not able to take advantage of it early on where you could have just kind of put your foot down on the Cowboys' throat. Hey, we're number one in the East. You're in our house. It's Monday night. We're going to show you. They did not do that and did not take advantage of those early that early turnover that the Cowboys had.
Yeah, what I saw last night was a team that does not fully believe in itself yet. I mean, they know they can read some of the press clippings of after the blowout of the Saints. I think that they got a little bit too high, and then the Panthers brought them back down to earth, mm-hmm. and then maybe they got a little bit too low, and it looked like they were kind of evening out against the Giants. But then you saw some things this weekend that says, well, maybe the Giants aren't the team that mm-hmm. we thought that, mm-hmm. that they were either. So this team is still, as you said so many times this season, still trying to find out who it is.
Right.
It's still, and I didn't see a lot last night to help them find out what was happening. Right.
Right. Right. Well, that and that's the thing right there is, you know, we're still asking the question, you know, who is this team? You know, what's going to be the identity on offense? I mean, I thought we saw the formula last week with that ground and pound game against the Giants where it looked like an old NFC East battle between the Redskins and Giants. But then I didn't see a lot of that again in a game that was so close. I'm just not sure. You know, where was Alfred Morris? How does he get 20 some odd carries last week and then only get 6 carries yesterday? And Matt Jones get 18. I don't understand this. Like, and where was he? Was he hurt? I didn't see any kind of injury report or anything like that on Alfred Morris. How come from something that worked so well last week, what happens in 1 week and a couple of carries into a game to where you stop doing that very thing?
Well, you've got to look at it like the coaching staff must think that running backs are like neckties. You may have to wear one to work, but you'll have to wear the same one to work.
Right.
So they're more fashion conscious than they are. I don't know if it's this, quote, new NFL that the parts and the players are interchangeable, but it you can't develop character like that unless you have, like, a pecking order. You got to know who's number one, and that's in all the positions. Because it spreads beyond the field. I mean, how can you develop leadership if the player who's trying to be a leader mm-hmm. is not, I mean, you're taking him out of the game. You're just yanking him back and forth like a yo-yo, right?
Right.
So you know, the other players will say, well, why should I listen to this guy? Because the coaches don't respect him enough to solidify his position. So it goes beyond the field. I think there's something they're going to have to examine. And the same thing goes with talent. Just because you got a guy like a certain tight end that can run open and catch a lot of balls, and I mentioned any names, number 86, but you got to do the rest of it, too. You got to block.
Got to block.
You got to learn how to do your job without causing penalties, right? Mm-hmm. You know. So, again, I'm not going to mention any names. Don't do this around number 86. But, you know, you got to help develop the identity of this team, too. You're great. You got numbers, but your position is tight end.
Right.
Right. So you don't have to bring in, like, offensive linemen and say,
play tight end. Because
number 61 is an eligible receiver. Because what's wrong with the eligible receiver we got? Number 86.
Not mentioning any names.
He won't block. He's got to do that, too. It's got to be a complete package, man.
No, absolutely. I think what you saw yesterday, man, honestly, you know, because, again, you know, I don't know what it's like among other fan bases because, again, born and raised in Washington, D.C., been around the Redskins my whole life. But there is something different about this fan base, and you don't see the bandwagon get churning quicker than any other than you see with this fan base
right. Anywhere
else. I mean, the fan base here and even the media here, for the most part, it takes one little thing to get optimistic about the bigger picture. And if there's one theme that we've had throughout the whole season for this show, the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, federalnewsradio.com, is what does this win mean? What does this loss mean? Because, again, I think we had talked about it in the beginning of the season. We were more big picture, long term, you know, 1 to 2 year focused. And I think what we saw yesterday, or whenever you listen to the show, if you're listening on Thursday, then we're talking about Monday night. What we saw Monday night was quite frankly a team that, 5-7. The reason they're even in contention for the playoffs is because they're in the worst division right now, or at least the division that's playing the worst right now in football. Who, quite frankly, aren't really that good. I mean, you look at the Cowboys' offense, and you can. I don't like to get into excuses, but you can tell they haven't been able to push the ball downfield or score much at all without Tony Romo. I mean, we know that. You got seven losses without him. That shows that. I mean, close ones to Tampa Bay and whatnot. Seattle was a close one. And so you know why they can't score. But then you look at the Skins, and remember when Deshaun was out, it's like, well, once he's back, we'll be able to have the deep threat, and then we're going to push the ball down the field. There's going to be tons of points. And outside of the game against the Saints, they haven't been able to do that. And you're looking at it like, okay, so now it gets back to the point that you were making with Gruden. Where is the offensive production? This is the quarterback you wanted. You've got full strength with Deshaun Jackson, with Jordan. You've got Pierre Garçon. You've got your mix of running backs that you seem to just want to change in and out. Where is the production on offense? And so you look at this. I don't want the 5-7 record and contending for the NFC East title to kind of jade the fact that this is a 5-7 team that is still in search of an identity.
Yeah, and you know, I think the thing with this coaching staff, all 26 of them, theoretically, they're good. As long as things are going according to plan, mm-hmm. they're good. And what you saw Monday night was a Dallas team that disrupted the plan. Mm-hmm. And it took them a long, it had to get to the point of desperation before they recovered from it, right? Because like I said, you hit the guy early and it sort of changes his attitude. And then that can-do attitude changed into a wait a minute. And even with all that, they were still in the game. They still had a destiny in their own mm-hmm. hands. They had some outstanding defensive performances. Mm-hmm. Mason Absolutely. Foster, mm-hmm. where did he come from? Was he on the roster last right. week? I had not heard of the guy.
Yeah, no,
and he came in causing fumbles, played the position well. I heard
seven total tackles for Mason Foster, four solo tackles.
Now,
yep.
Mm-hmm. Now, I heard I do listen to other radio programs, and there's a disturbing trend here. They're trying to talk Keenan Robinson back on the field through the media because Keenan Robinson has a shoulder injury. Apparently, this is what they're saying on these other shows. The coaches think that he can play, and he's not, you know, playing hurt. Now, how these other people can know what's in the guy's mind and his mm-hmm. heart, you know, and say that. But I don't like the fact that they're saying this to these media people and then the public opinion spreads and all that. Mm-hmm. We don't know. The same thing was happening with Deshaun Jackson. Apparently, the coaching staff felt he could get back on the field before he did.
Right.
And Deshaun, being the veteran, said, I know when my body's ready. I'll let you know. And even when he came back, it took him a little while. But I'm saying all this to say what's happening in the meantime is you're developing depth. When Deshaun was out, you had a guy like Jamison Crowder being developed. Now mm-hmm. with Keenan Robinson out, you got a guy like Foster developing. And look how the secondary, how they're developing, how guys like Blackman, how guys
right,
like,
right.
They're developing. And
Rashard Breeland. Yeah.
Breeland, these guys, you got to tip your hat to a Scott McLuhan, right? Because he's building a team. Okay, now we had that like the little gravy on the side of competing for a division title.
Right.
But looking at the big picture, I think this loss does them a lot of good. I mean, I heard John Thompson say once, "You can never learn anything from losing." And if John was here, I'd agree with him. But he ain't here, so I'm gonna say this. Right. I think that this is an eye opener for them. And if they can get mad enough, develop mm-hmm. a fire, develop like a rivalry, realize what these division games mean, mm-hmm. I think in the long run, I think this fan base can be very proud of what's happening here.
Right. Well, you know what? What's interesting, too, by the way, you're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Also, the website, federalnewsradio.com. The Washington Redskins lose to the Dallas Cowboys at home, 19-16, to fall to 5-7, but still in first, tied for first place in the NFC East. The Cowboys just one game back at 4-8. Could be a division that someone wins with a 7-9 record, 8-8 record. That still remains to be seen, I guess, with these last four games. And we'll take a look at the last four games for the Redskins, for the Cowboys, for the Eagles, and for the Giants a little later on in the show. Also, we have a movie review from Kevin, so we'll take a look at that. And we want to talk about Ken Beatrice, DC sports broadcasting legend, who passed away earlier this week. And so we'll do all that a little bit later on in the show. And so, again, you were talking about the big picture kind of thing with the Redskins and how, you know, kind of a back to earth. I think sometimes, you know, you have these games that are like measuring sticks. And again, this kind of game, and you almost heard it in the press conference, if anyone listened to any postgame sound, from Matt Cassel, where he talked about when the Cowboys were up 16-9, and then Deshaun Jackson scores that touchdown. He says, I'm just thinking, uh-oh, here we go again. Like, this is another one of these games where we're going to, you know, as opposed to saying, okay, well, I have the ball back in my hands and we'll be able to score. He knows what has happened before with Dallas in these situations that they've lost. I mean, he knows that they haven't won a game without Romo. He hears that every, you know, all the time. And so he even thinks that, okay, we're going to lose this game. But again, they come back, they win it. And so you look at it, here's a team that hasn't won a game without their starting quarterback. They come here and they win a close one when they've lost all the close ones before this. It is a measuring stick. And it shows you, you know, look, let's not get as high as our highs are. Let's not think that every week is going to be like the Saints game, but every week's not going to be like the Panthers game. It is a good measuring stick to show just exactly where you are and not to let the talk of NFC East champion kind of distort you into thinking you're better than what you are. It's more so because the other team's records are so bad.
Yeah, and looking at both teams last night, it for a minute, it seems like the defenses are up to par, but maybe the offenses are just a little bit too complicated.
Correct.
Or guys just don't understand the game of football because before the DeSean Jackson touchdown catch, Dallas had the ball driving. The running back was, for some reason, runs out of bounds with the ball.
Unbelievable.
He runs out of
bounds. Unbelievable.
You fall down.
Like,
you
what
run
are
out
you
the clock.
Doing?
Washington doesn't get only has like time for maybe 30 seconds left. But he runs out of bounds. I said, doesn't somebody like talk to these guys, explain to them, here's the circumstance, here's the situation, here's what we need to do. It's just so strange, right? The punt return from DeSean. We just say, hey, look, just number one, I don't like him being in the game right there. Don't waste him right now.
Right,
this is
right.
Not that critical game. If it's a playoff game, do that. I mean, you wouldn't, I mean, back in the, you know, the revisiting, like the years where Darryl Green used to come in at key moments.
Yeah, it's
right,
not a must win situation.
Right. So don't blame DeSean. Plus, DeSean tried.
Right.
DeSean tried. And like I said, speaking to George Wallace earlier, he was saying that DeSean, he was
at
the game.
Let's jump at this,
He was at the game. He saw DeSean was running open quite a bit. And he wants the ball. He wants to contribute. He wants to help the team win. And he's a very emotional guy. He was getting very frustrated. So that's what you saw in that punt return. He was wanting to help this team so bad that he just let common sense fly out the window, right?
Right. And here's the thing. I mean, it's one thing if a guy who does not make big plays does something
right.
like that.
Right.
DeSean makes plays.
Right.
He's a playmaker.
Right.
And so sometimes your playmakers are going to do something and it's just going to blow up in your face. And hey, I tried to make something happen.
Right.
But then there are times where they do something and you're like, whoa, that was an incredible play by DeSean Jackson, because that's what they do. Playmakers always think that they can make plays. And so all this, you know, Tuesday morning quarterbacking and all the second guessing of DeSean only comes because it doesn't work. It didn't work. You get what I'm
exactly
saying?
Exactly right.
But when
exactly
it's something,
right.
you know, fabulous that he does and it does work, this is what makes these guys playmakers. And I love the passion. I love him saying, I'm going to take it into my own. This is what I love about guys like DeSean Jackson. You see it with Phillip Rivers. You see it with Dez Bryant. These guys are passionate about winning. If there's one thing that people say about athletes nowadays is that they don't care about winning. They don't care. All they care about is the money and the fame and stuff like that. And they probably care about the money and the fame as well. But these guys want to win. And when they get frustrated, they yell. They get in teammates' faces. They want to pump people up. They want fire out of their teammates because they want them to feel the same right. way they feel. They right. want to win the game. And
right.
DeSean said, I have to take matters into my own hands because I have no confidence that if the ball is in number eight's hand, that it's going to get to me in order for me to do
right.
So while the ball is in my hands, let me do something.
Yeah, you got to love winning, and even more, you got to hate losing.
Right,
you can't think of losing as an acceptable circumstance. So everybody, yeah, I know you heard on other radio shows, and first of all, if you listen to another radio show, why are you doing that? But if you listen and you hear the other guys dogging DeSean, saying what a bonehead player was, forget all of that, man, because if it wasn't for DeSean, the guys wouldn't be nowhere near where they are today, right? So just keep that into consideration, right?
Exactly.
Take that
you want
into consideration.
You got to be real. Do you want them on your team or do you
right.
not? Right now,
right,
right now,
right.
you kind of want them on the team.
Right. And I tell them, hey, if you want to return punts, you go ahead. You do whatever you want to do. Next time we'll block for you better.
Yeah, right.
right.
You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The website is federalnewsradio.com. The Cowboys beat the Redskins on Monday Night Football 19.
Wait a minute. One more thing. Mm-hmm. I heard some people complaining about the officiating last night, too, right? Monday night. Man. What did you think about that? Did you think, I mean, it threw a lot of flags,
well,
but it seemed like it was throwing it on both sides.
Yeah, no,
right?
Here's the thing. Well, number one, let's say that the officiating thing all season long on multiple levels has been pretty bad. But last night, I think it was a tightly called game. There were a lot of flags. It was a tightly called game, but I felt it was fair. I didn't feel like there was, you know, a bad call, leaning more towards more calls against the Skins or Cowboys one way. I thought it was fair. What about you?
Yeah, you know, they got to stop doing marginal things. At the end of the first half, you know this pick play that they're running in the NFL?
Right.
Everybody knows it's pass in the first.
Right.
That's the purpose of running. That's why they call it a pick play, right?
Right.
Pick is basketball, right?
Right.
It's illegal. And Pierre Garçon got called late in the first half.
Speaking of pick plays and basketball, you can catch American University basketball, Navy basketball, and George Washington University basketball on this fine network, Federal News Radio.
That's right. Absolutely. All right. All right. Yeah, we should mention that more often. And they should mention us sometimes, too. But Pierre got called down and called back a first down call. But the thing is, if you're going to run that play, you got to be less obvious. You got to stumble, fall, do something. Don't go into directly for the man. You got to act like you're running your route or something.
Right.
So if you want to stop getting called for offensive pass interference on that play, stop doing it like that. You got to change some things, too. The ref could have let it go. Don't put it in the ref's hands. Don't give him the option whether he can call it or not.
And everybody's doing that play, and so, of course, they're looking out for it a lot more.
Right,
now because,
exactly.
I mean, you know, and like you said, the truth is it is pass interference. I mean, you've got one receiver whose sole option is to distract and chip the guy who is, trying to guard the other receiver, trying to check the other receiver so he can get open and get the ball across the field. I mean, that's exactly what it is. The whole point is try not to make it obvious so they can't call it. Just kind of get in the way a little bit. So you're right. I mean, I totally, totally agree. Coming up, we'll go take a look at the rest of the NFC East, the last four games for the Redskins, Cowboys, Eagles, and Giants. There's one common denominator between three of the teams. I think the winner of the NFC East has got to go through Buffalo, because Buffalo plays the Eagles, they play the Cowboys, and they play the Redskins. And so the Bills have a hand to play in who's going to win the East. And so we'll talk about that coming up, looking at those schedules. Also, Kevin has a movie to review. I think we'll do that first. We got to get some cheer going on here, because, you know, I don't talk about this loss all day. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio.
Now, back to the Federal Football Report with Claude and Kevin. You know, they asked me to read this, but did they invite me to be on their dopey show? Of course not. The nerve of some people. Come on, guys. I like football, too.
Welcome back to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the website federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield, of course, talking about the Redskins' 19-16 loss to the Dallas Cowboys. Redskins, Giants, Eagles, 5-7, three-way tie for the NFC East lead. The Cowboys just one game back at a measly 4-8, but second place in the East. We'll see. It's going to be interesting 4 weeks to see how this thing plays out.
Did you see the Giants game, man? I did.
Now, the Giants had this game won against the Jets.
Right. They had an opportunity to kick a field goal that would put them up by 13 points with about 6 minutes left. And Tom Coughlin, for some inexplicable reason, decides that he's going to go for it on 4th-and-2.
And there was also that, and this may have been in the third quarter, there was also that interception Eli threw in the red zone.
Only in the red zone, they won like the 3-yard line. From the shotgun, both plays from the shotgun.
So goofy. And I'll be honest with you, this seems to always happen to Eli Manning or Tony Romo. That I got to see a stat, but it's like they throw the most interceptions in the red zone. Like their fan base has got to be so worried. I can't imagine being worried at the 6-yard line, if you're a Cowboys fan or a Giants fan.
Now, the Giants have a new offensive coordinator. I don't know if this is his first year or
second year.
This is his second year.
Because last year was the mistakes year. It was like, well, I got to get used to the whole offense for Eli.
Sorry,
now.
Last year. But this, it was inexplicable. But somebody had to make that call, or the coach had to approve that call to go. It had to be the coach's decision to go for it. Now, Tom Coughlin's about 75 years old or something. He's an old dude, right? Well, let's say that, you know, when I get 75, I want to say, 75 ain't bad.
He's
got to be thinking about something else. He can't be thinking about winning this game, because if they had made it, you got to, and someone said this to me once. He said, whenever you do a risky play in football, you have to take into consideration what will happen if you don't make it.
If you don't make it, right?
You know? And what the worst happened? They came back and scored and scored and put the game into overtime and won.
Right.
Jets did.
And you had this crazy scenario, and it's so funny, and we'll talk about this because you made the great point before the show started that you know, people think Jerry Jones is crazy for not putting Tony Romo on the IR, but they probably think they still have a shot at winning. I have my brother, who's a Cowboys fan, had texted me moments after the Giants game. I didn't watch the end. I was at Buffalo Wild Wings just watching some games, and so I left, and my brother texted me and said the Giants lost to the Jets. Check one, smiley face, because he believes. Look, if the Giants lose, and it doesn't really matter what the Eagles do right now, and then the Cowboys beat the Redskins. Hey, man, we're just one game out, and so he texted me. He's like, hey, they and it's all like, what? You know, you're absolutely. It's so crazy what's happening in the NFC East right now.
Yeah, because people were ridiculing Jerry Jones because he did not put Tony Romo on the IR, but he says, and you got to look at it like.
Mathematically, like, we're not out of this.
We have a chance. We still have a chance. And see what? That's leadership. As convoluted and crazy as it might be, that's still leadership.
But you know what? And everybody on that team believes that. If you listen to the post-game audio from the Cowboys locker room, from Dez Bryant to Jason Witten to Morris Claiborne, all these guys are saying, hey, look, it sounds crazy, and yeah, we're 4-8, but we aren't eliminated just yet, and we're going to go out there and try to make something of it these last four games. And that's as crazy as it sounds. Like you said, that's leadership. That's don't give up. And they came out and they played like they had something to play.
And you know, the interesting thing.
Even though Matt Castle's their quarterback, they still came out and played like they were something to play.
Remind me, I got to talk about Castle too. But the interesting thing is, especially in this town, the last three times this team has made it into the playoffs, it was situations like that where they had to win out.
Yeah, a 3-7 team. And right. They win all their games and they beat the Cowboys last game of the season.
If you remember the last time, as a matter of fact, the head coach said something like, well, at this point, we're just here evaluating talent, right?
Right.
And the quarterback had to come and said, wait a minute, we're not giving up anything yet, right?
Yeah, you know? Where's the right? There you
that's
go.
That's leadership.
About leadership.
That comes from the very top. Now, back to Matt Castle real quick. And we all going to get to the movie review, but this is a football show. We just, you know, we're talking football. When you're getting a backup quarterback, you have your team. You have the structure of your team. You know the style your quarterback plays. Wouldn't it behoove you, I don't say behoove too often, but wouldn't it behoove you to get a quarterback whose style is similar to the one who's starting, right?
Yeah. There were three plays in the first quarter that I'm sitting at home watching the game, and I like to watch these games, these important games like this, by myself. You know what I mean? But I allow my wife to watch them with me.
Good for you.
You know, usually I wouldn't, but I'm allowing her, as of recent years, to do it, to watch games with me. And so I'm watching this, and there are three plays where I'm saying Romo makes that play simply because he has the pocket presence and the slip ability, if we can coin such a term, to get away from certain defenders that Castle just doesn't have.
Right.
And he makes that decision quicker than Matt Castle makes and other quarterbacks. I mean, as much as we joke with Romo, Romo's a good quarterback. And so I'm looking at three plays where I'm like, Romo makes that play. And then you say this just now, and I'm like, you know what? Not only would Romo, but a quarterback like Romo, you know, with that kind of mentality, would make that play, would escape, would be able to, because it isn't the third and longs that the Cowboys miss Romo's for. It's those third and fives, those third and fours, third and six that they miss him.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead.
A quarterback like Castle, you need to develop, you need to have a solid pocket.
Right.
And he needs to know the pocket's going to be there. Mm-hmm. And if he has to stand flat-footed,
right,
he'll stand flat-footed. Mm-hmm. Romo's thing is his footwork. Romo makes the pocket move
right. Wherever
he needs to. If he needs to buy himself a couple of seconds, he'll just shuffle to the left, shuffle to the right. So that's why I don't understand why would you... And like here, we got three kind of similar quarterbacks in terms of the mobility.
Well, I told you my theory, my conspiracy theory, or my crazy prediction for 2016 before the show was that, you know, the Cowboys' next backup quarterback is actually on the Redskins roster.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He wears
absolutely.
Number 10.
as well as the starting running back.
Right. He wears number 46. Yeah. You're absolutely right. So that's, you know, we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
But who knows? I mean, you know, imagine that. How ironic would that be? Anyway, you're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield. We're going to shift gears now. Look, it was a popular segment a couple of weeks ago when we did it, the movie review, and so we're going to do that again. Kevin, you've got another movie for us that you're going to review right now,
that's
correct?
Right. That's right. This week's movie is In the Heart of the Sea. I know you guys seen the trailer, but, you know, it's spectacular.
It seems interesting. Yeah.
It seems very interesting about the whale. Uh-huh. And, you know, you could... everyone saw Jaws, right? You know, great white shark, right? You remember, 20 feet long. Imagine Jaws with no teeth, about 200 feet long. That's what this thing is, man. In the heart of the sea, you know, and it takes place back in the days of the early colonization of America, right? The late 1700s.
When they found a country that already existed.
Right? Anyway, it existed, and people become very capitalistic. And, you know, when people used to heat their homes and light their homes and stuff with whale oil.
Okay.
That was the deal, right? Uh-huh. You know, so whaling was the end of, just like BP and Exxon Mobil, all that stuff is.
Whaling
was the thing back in the day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the guys, the whalers were ruthless. It's a barbaric thing. And mm-hmm. one thing I'll say about this movie is it shows the barbarism of whaling. Like, you see these groups like Greenpeace trying to get, attack the whaling ships.
They're crazy.
But once you see the barbarism of what's happening with these whales, right? You know, there's a scene with Dances with Wolves, if you remember that, when mm-hmm. Kevin Costner was out there skinning buffaloes. Mm-hmm. Imagine that with a whale, man. It's a barbaric thing, right? Mm-hmm. So, but still, I probably would use whale oil if I had to, right?
Heat in your home.
Yeah, this movie is about a particular whaling ship, the Essex, and the stories of what happened to it, because when there was a terrible tragedy, and there was one living survivor of the Essex, and the guy who wrote Moby Dick, Herman Melville, mm-hmm. sought out this guy. He wanted to know what happened, right? Uh-huh. You know, because he heard about this big whale. And allegedly, you know how you see movies based on a true story. Who knows if it's true or not? So allegedly, the story of the Essex was the inspiration for Moby Dick, right? You know, so that's what they told me it was based on a true story. So I guess I believe. Even, right, so, but and it was in 3D. It was also shocked me because you think of 3D for an action adventure movie or something, right? But I found 3D very effective in this movie because it's out in the ocean, you see a bird flying by.
Thing. Like, so you could feel the effects because usually I just don't, like, the screen just looks different a little bit, some funny colors. But I don't see. But you feel the effects of the 3D.
Do you remember this thing it was an outfit called ViewMaster. They used to have a thing where it was like binoculars, but you put a little disc in and you can look through it, and you see like little Disney cartoons mm-hmm. and things. That's what it reminded me of, right? For a while. But then because when you're in somebody's house, you see that, you see little books and you see the little thing. Yeah. It was like 3D. It was like two-dimensional 3D, right?
Okay,
yeah, that's what it was like, right? But the thing about this movie was the star of the movie was the whale, right?
Okay. Here's the question that I have, though, about the, because see, when you hear about these movies or whatever, and you go in with these expectations. So when I see the previews and I go in, I expect to see the whale a great deal. But the problem is I'm always disappointed in these because then you see like the whale for, 5 minutes of an hour and a half long movie. And that's disappointing to me. Like, do you get to see the whale and does the whale do stuff throughout the movie?
You get to see the whale, most of the movie.
Okay.
Put it this way, when the whale shows up, you know he's there. The whale makes his presence known.
Right.
Because this whale is mad.
Does it seem upset and angry?
The whale is mad.
Okay.
And, whalers say,
and here's a disclosure too, by the way, guys. Like, for those listening, if this is going to ruin the movie for you, then you may want to just fast forward if you listen to the podcast, or just kind of do something else in the next couple of minutes if you listen on the radio. But nothing ruins movies for me. I will still be shocked, and so I don't. There's no spoiler alert here, guys. I'm going to ask Kevin what happened in the movie, and if you don't want to know, turn it. But I'm going to ask him what happened because nothing ruins a movie for me. So go right ahead.
By the same token, I am a professional movie critic, so I'm not going to spoil the movie for you, but I'm just going to tell you, when the whale shows up, he makes his presence known. One of the guys says, man, I've never seen a whale do that before, right? And that's the whole thing, the thing about Moby Dick, we all had to read Moby Dick when we were children, right? But that was, it was metaphoric, right? The whale represented things in Melville's piece, right? And Ahab represented things. Mm-hmm. This wasn't a representation. This was a man and a whale.
And a boat.
And you know what?
The boat went down.
In this contest, the whale is favored by two touchdowns. And the man doesn't cover. but see, the thing about the movie isn't just beyond. And to me, that's a good movie, right?
Right.
But the movie goes beyond that, mm-hmm. and it gets into the hearts and souls of men. And that's when they lose me, right?
Okay.
Because I don't want to go into the hearts and souls of men.
I just
want to
see a whale.
I just want to see the whale
jump out the water and smash a boat.
And it was, and it got deep. It got extremely deep.
Because the main human character become this obsessed dark figure now who's just obsessed with the whale and when it was unnecessary.
Well, I can't divulge that twist in the plot, but it wasn't like a personal. They tried to make it a personal relationship between him and the whale, but it was also the main character is played by Chris Hemsworth, who is Thor, seen as Thor in his own franchise and in the Avengers and stuff like that, and he plays a good sailor dude, you know, big swashbuckling dude, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so he works well in the role, right? But the relationships with the other characters and the relationship with the captain and it just doesn't add anything to that type of movie for me, mm-hmm. because number one, it's not like it's a surprise when the whale comes to smash up your little boat.
Right?
You know,
right.
What did you think the whale was going to do? Right. As a matter of fact, if more whales had seen this, there'd be a lot less whale oil in the 1700s, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. People have been cold and dark. Right?
Yeah.
Because
exactly.
Whales had to say, because whales are pretty docile guys, right? Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah. And whales routinely don't try to mess with anybody.
Right,
they pretty much stay to themselves, so for the most part.
A lot of times you see people like, you know, tourists go to certain place in Martha's Vineyard. Hey, let's go whale watching, right?
Because if you just watch them, they're okay with
that. Right.
Just watch me.
Just watch them. But they didn't just watch the whales. And see, the whales, they finally had enough, you know, in this movie, right? You know, so all in all, if we were going in terms of stars, I give the movie maybe 2.5 stars just
for
me.
That's not bad. Out of what, 5?
Out of 4.
Oh, out of 4? Oh, yeah, that's not bad.
It's not bad. It wasn't bad just because, like I said, the 3D effects were pretty stimulating. You know, like I said, based on a true story. But then it sort of made me think less of Herman Melville because, you know, I thought he made up Moby Dick, right?
Right.
But if he made it up after a real whale, right? You know, it's just like, they made Jaws after a real shark, right? It wasn't imagination then. It's
correct.
Sort of like a nature documentary.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. Almost like, you know, you saying all that about, you know, the whale, if more whales had seen, what was the movie that just came out that talked almost like an animal revolution? I think it was named Zoo. Did you see that?
No, Animal Revolution.
James Patterson Zoo, I think is what it was. I got it.
It just came out as a book. We need more animal revolutions.
Yeah. So anyway, well, you're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. That was Kevin's movie review. So it sounds like it's a go see if you have time.
Yeah, if you have time, or you can wait for the DVD. But it's
a TV series, Zoo. I see that.
Yeah, you would lose something waiting for the DVD. Because, like I said, the 3D, it works. And there's one part I'm not divulging, right? During the extracting the whale oil from the whale. Because the way this works is these guys would leave home, and they'd be gone for a couple of years at a time, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and their goal was to get X number of barrels of whale oil.
Wow.
So it wasn't like...
So they were at sea for a long
time. Right. Years at a time, right?
Wow.
You know, they would make reference of, like, some of the whalers have never seen any of their kids born, right? Because they were always away when the kids were born, right? Mm-hmm. They were there when the kids were made, but
right.
they were born, right?
One would assume. You know,
but one of the 3D aspects of it was when they were actually gutting the whale, getting this oil out of the whale, right? That was remarkable. It was disgusting, but it was remarkable because they had the 3D thing working, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you miss that if you wait for the DVD. So if there's nothing else happening, right, let's say the Burgundy Gold aren't playing, like, you know, they don't make the playoffs, you know, and it's still at the movies, yeah, check it out.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Good. Well, we've got meaningful December football coming up, and so we're going to talk about the Redskins' final four games. We'll look at the Cowboys' final four, and then we'll do the Giants and Eagles, too. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio.
And now back to Claude and Kevin and the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. You know, they aren't half bad for a couple of old guys.
Welcome back to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, the website federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings. I think we already tied a bow on the last loss. Okay, we get that. So let's look at the Redskins lose to the Cowboys 19-16. Yeah. So let's look ahead to the final four games, which means, you know, this is what it's going to come down to as far as who's going to win the NFC East. You've got a three-way tie with the Eagles, Redskins, and Giants at 5-7. Cowboys 4-8, just one game back, still in the playoff picture, as weird as that sounds. So let's look at these teams. So you've got the Philadelphia Eagles, who just beat the Patriots. They've got the Bills, Cardinals, Redskins, and Giants coming up.
Now, well, wait a minute. The Patriots now are in trouble. The Patriots are in trouble because Golden Boy isn't quite as golden without his top receivers.
Right, you know? Without Gronk, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Without Edelman.
And you know, I kind of agree with Brady and Gronk when they were saying they feel like teams are purposely aiming for his knees. Because I've always felt like that for the last 2 years, that it seems like he gets a lot of action around those knees, man.
Yeah, well, the league has to do something about that. And who was the safety that used to play for the Burgundy and Gold? He came out and said, because he got flagged quite a bit for the headshots. And he said, well, I guess I just had to go after the knees, then,
right,
you know?
Right, right. So who does he play for now?
He plays for the Giants.
For the Giants. Yeah. I can't remember his name, but he used to always get flagged for those hits.
Yeah. So yeah, without Gronk, without Edelman, they're like the big Russian Rocky Cutum, right?
Exactly.
You know? So you gotta give it to the Eagles, because that was a floundering ship there. Speaking of ships and crashing and stuff,
yeah, I mean, you lose three straight to you lose to Tampa Bay, lose to Detroit, and then you got the Patriots coming up. You figure that's gonna be the fourth straight loss because you're losing and you're losing bad.
Yeah. But you got realistically though, it was a interception return for a touchdown, mm-hmm. punt for a touchdown,
right.
Punt return for a touchdown.
How many times is that going to happen?
Yeah, all in one game.
And then they beat the Patriots immediately after the game. DeMarco Murray has a meeting with the owner of the Eagles about his dissatisfaction after they win and snap a three-game losing streak.
You know what? No, call me crazy, and you probably will. Yeah.
No,
I'm
with you.
The other guys would just sit there and take the paycheck. I don't care if I play or not, but he wants to play. I'm sure he wants to win, too, but he wants to play. So, hey, you know, I know, well, don't come here because, you know, no telling where you'll be in the running back hierarchy here.
Right. 1 week you get 20-some odd carries, the next week you get six.
So
the Eagles got Buffalo, the Cardinals, the Redskins, and the Giants. So that's two division games that they close the season out with. And so that could be pretty, pretty big for the Eagles. The Giants close out with the Dolphins, Panthers, Vikings, and Eagles again. So they've got one more division game coming up. That's could be a pretty big one for the Giants. The Cowboys has the Packers this weekend, then the Jets, Bills, and then the Redskins. And the Redskins, where's their schedule? They have
the Bills next, right?
The Bears, yeah, Bears, Bills, Eagles, and Cowboys. And so they have two division games to close the season out as well. And so it's going to be interesting in the NFC East, to say the least. And so we'll
see.
Who's
in the top 10 in quarterback rating in the league right now?
Who would that be?
Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, you know what? He's playing pretty good in Buffalo. Isn't sitting behind in Baltimore.
Baltimore sitting behind Flacco all the time.
They
right?
can Maybe. Use him now, actually, with Flacco being hurtful this season.
That's the thing, right? You know, if you're going to have a backup quarterback, have something to add something to it. And a lot of times it's just experience, man. Getting some games under your belt, right? You know, and he had an opportunity to go to Buffalo and complete for a starting job. He took it, and hey, hats off to him. You know, don't wish him success in that game when they're coming here, right? I want to disclose my age. I remember O.J. Simpson coming here to play when he was playing for the Buffalo Bills.
Mm-hmm.
It ran roughshod.
That's it. So the Buffalo Bills are the next.
So it boils down to the last week in the NFC East,
basically,
right?
Basically, is what it looks like. It's going to boil down to the last 2 weeks, depending on what happens in these in the first two of four weeks.
Nobody is really out of it.
No, everybody's still in it. Anyone can win this division, even the 4-8 Dallas Cowboys, still in it.
Oh, man.
Remarkable.
It's amazing. We'd take it if we had the opportunity. But, man, it's just something. It's sort of like fool's gold, man. It's like you want your team to be successful, go to the playoffs, win the Super Bowl. That's the dream and all that. But
at the end of the day, you know that they're 5-7.
Right.
Not really,
this is a 5-7 team, right?
It's a reflection of the NFC East.
Yeah, you want your team to be better too. We want some improvement. You know, right now they can show some improvement, or they can show maybe they're about where they were last year.
And so then we want to turn the tables a little bit, because we wanted to dedicate time to the show, and Kevin was really good about making sure that we do this. Today, the DC local sports radio personality Ken Beatrice died December 6th. And Kevin, you wanted to share some memories of Ken. I mean, I remember a lot of Ken growing up and things like that. But right around the time that I was kind of conscious of what's going on in DC media and stuff was kind of at the time that he was kind of pulling out. And so go right ahead.
You know, at one time, well, the precursor of all this was Warner Wolf. Warner Wolf, who ended up, in New York with Howard Stern and doing sports on CBS radio in New York. But sports radio in this town in the 70s and 80s was Ken Beatrice on WMAL every night at 7 o'clock. Ken Beatrice, sports call, right? You know, and there was no other sports radio. There was no other sports calling show in the city, or in a lot of cities, as a matter of fact. But Ken Beatrice would come on at 7. He had a 10 o'clock show. Ken was the kindest, most respectful individual. He would try to talk facts. Now, I don't know if he was like off the air, right? He might have been like, you know, a maniac or even maniac off the air. But every person who called was very important to Ken, right? You know, and Ken would say, if I don't have time to talk to you today, you know, here's my office number. You call. And I know people who have called Ken in his office, and he sat there and took the time to have a conversation with him, answer any question he would want to know, right? And Ken, like I said, was the precursor. I would listen to Ken. I would do a lot of driving in the evenings, and I'd listen to Ken. And no matter what the subject was, he'd have a conversation with you, right? He understood the connection of this fan base and the teams, especially the Burgundy and Gold, right? He understood that, and he would never. There's a trend in Tennessee in talk radio for the host to ridicule the callers, right?
Right. Yeah.
Which I particularly hate, because I started out as a caller, right? That's how I got my start, right? You know, and only difference between the callers and some of these guys on the radio is one of the guys has a mic, right. One doesn't, right? You know, but Ken wouldn't do that. Like, at least not publicly, right? He was sports radio, and when the big boy in town, which is the WTEM, came and launched a sports station. I guess it started out with the Fan in New York, right? But when Ken was still doing his show. Matter of fact, Ken gave guys like Doc Walker a start. Doc was like an intern on Ken's show when he was playing for the Burgundy Eagle. When Doc first realized he wanted to get in the media, he was interning with Ken, right?
Oh,
and
man.
They would tease Ken. They would make up a guy, and Ken would say, "Oh yeah, I know him. Out of Clemson, linebacker. He's sort of smallish, 125 pounds, soaking wet, you know." But the biggest moment to me in this town in sports radio is when Ken Beatrice joined WTEM, because, like I said, Ken was the godfather of sports in this town, and everyone. Everyone who's on the radio and sports in this town owes a debt of gratitude to Ken Beatrice.
Wow. Yeah. Ken Beatrice passed away December 6th earlier this week. So, of course, our thoughts, prayers to Ken and all those who his family and all those who he's touched. Many people across this area and across the nation touched by Ken Beatrice. So that's the Federal Football Report for this week. Thanks to Kevin. We'll have another movie review before the year's out, right?
I'm hoping to do another one, Star Wars, because we know that no one's going to see it unless I review it, right? You know,
right. Look, Dallas beats the Redskins, 1916, but hey, there's meaningful football in Washington in December.
We're in first place, right?
Every single game from here on out is going to matter.
And so confusing, though, right?
Even though it's 5-7.
We got a losing team. We're in first place. Are we happy? Are we sad? What is it?
What's going on, man? We don't know. But one thing we do know, we'll be back with more confusion next week trying to figure things out on the Federal Football Report.